Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. To kick this one off, we're going to go back to the last episode in which one of the topics was when tarantulas burrow and don't come up. And I've talked about the whole point of it, if you haven't listened to it yet, is the fact that although for years we've been told that tarantulas that burrow, they're perfectly fine. It means they're in pre-molt. They don't want to be disturbed, especially when they seal up their burrow and lock themselves beneath. And what we're starting to find and what I've found in my own collection is there are certain circumstances where that is not true, where a tarantula seems to bury itself far enough down that it doesn't come up looking for food. So you can have a tarantula go down, molt, it's nice and skinny, should be ready to eat. You drop a cricket, you drop a roach, you drop a mealworm up on the surface, and it never comes up to eat that prey item. And I think more of us are starting to notice these situations, or I think what's happening is it's becoming a little more safe to talk about it. Because for years, if you came out and posted on a board or on a Facebook group and said, hey, my tarantula is on the bottom of its burrow, it's sealed it up and it's not eating, should I be concerned? Everybody would go, no, that's what they do. Don't worry about it. It'll come up on its own. But a lot of us have experienced issues where that is not the case. I went through a few that I witnessed in just my timekeeping. Well, I got a message, Facebook message from Martin from Bird Spiders CH, is a YouTube channel that if you haven't checked out, you absolutely should, because while I'm writing about tarantulas that I observe in the comforts of my own home, Martin actually goes out into the field and finds them and documents what he finds. Very intelligent man, knows his stuff, and it was kind of a treat for me to find out that he was even listening to the podcast, but he chimed in on that one. And basically what he did is confirm one of the theories that I figured was probably true, but I haven't seen it with my own eyes, but many of us have been discussing, the fact that in many cases in the wild, these small tiny slings never have to leave their burrows or retreats to find food. So he said that's certainly the case, that tarantulas don't always need to scavenge from their retreat, especially smaller species like Agnostopelma will remain in the retreat if there's live prey underneath the rocks and eat larvae and other insects from the retreat who burrow into its home. So exactly what we had talked about, and this is something we've noticed more, those of us who have seen it have noticed it more with slings and even in some cases with juveniles, smaller specimens, and that have a propensity to burrow anyway because it's going to be safer for them in the wild than being out exposed to, you know, not only the elements, the hot weather, the dry weather, but predation from other animals. That we started thinking that there are probably cases where they can burrow or hide underneath a rock or hide underneath something and have prey items that come right to them. So if they're in our collections, what we are going to see is a situation where the animal burrows, it stays there because it's expecting that natural instinct that, hey, prey is going to come to me. They're expecting the prey items to come to them, and then they don't. And then we have those situations like I had with my pulchra where it molted, it was at the bottom of its closure, and it just sat there waiting, like, where's my food? It doesn't matter that there was roaches running around up top. It wasn't responding to them. It was staying at the bottom. So we're definitely onto something here. I truly, Martin, hopefully you're listening to this one, I truly appreciate you chiming in. And again, Martin doesn't only have the channel Bird Spider CH. He also has a podcast that he shares with Kat from Tarantula Cat, another friend of mine from the hobby, that's excellent. It's called Both World Tarantulas. So feel free to check that out as well. I'd encourage you guys to check out both and check out her channel as well if you haven't already. But awesome stuff, Martin. Thank you so much. It's great to have somebody come in and chime in on this. And I think Martin made the comment during his thing that he didn't realize this information would even be, you know, interesting or surprising to people. But I think for those of us that are in the hobby that have been told from day one that this is the behavior to expect, they'll burrow, they're going to be fine, they're going to come up to eat, this might be surprising to some people. Again, I think there's some of us that through the discussion, especially after posting that P. muticus video, there were people that, you know, came forward that had seen them in the wild and said, no, I think there's stuff underground that they can eat. You know, we had a theory, we started thinking that, but it's awesome to get confirmation from somebody who actually sees them in the wild and has witnessed this type of behavior. So there we go. I feel much better about posting that last one because I was waiting. You know, anytime you post something up that flies in the face of what people have commonly held and believed to be true about the hobby, you always worry about pushback. You worry about people going, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. I don't so much worry about it, but I recognize that's a possibility. So I'm glad we could finally get this information and kind of put this one to rest. So I think the long and short of it is don't overdo it with your fossorial species, especially the younger ones. The older ones, it seems like they'll come up. I haven't heard any of these issues with adult specimens, but feel free to chime in if you've seen something like this. mostly with the slings, but recognize the fact that if you find out something like, say, your P. muticus in the wild has a 9-foot burrow, so you think is a little half-inch sling, it needs like 8 inches of substrate, no, stop right there. Give it enough space so that it can actually feel that prey at them up top, because I have seen when I took my P. muticus out and put them in smaller enclosures, more shallow enclosures with less room for them to burrow. I still allowed them to burrow, but there was less room at the top. I noticed they were coming up no problem and find the food. They'd feel the vibrations of the crickets. They'd come out. It was no issue. So just keep that in mind when you're housing them, something I will be mentioning, you know, in a future video, whatnot, because I think this is information that people need to know. And again, when I first did it, it was P. muticus, but we've added many different species to that list that we have witnessed this behavior with, some that you would not expect it from. So again, thanks so much, Martin. I really appreciate it, and it's great to finally have that information. So for the second part of our podcast, I'm just going to vent for a minute, and I apologize in advance, but I do think this is something I want to kind of get out there because, you know, the nature of the beast with doing this Tom's Big Spider stuff, I think I've made it clear before, I'm not huge into social media. I think that probably sounds odd from somebody that is on YouTube, but please remember that when I started posting stuff on YouTube, I was really just using it as a place to upload videos that I could show friends and family. It was just kind of easier to go, instead of showing them on my phone or sending them an email, I could go, hey, go to my, you know, hidden YouTube channel here, and here's a picture of my OBT getting mad or whatever. It was never in my intention to be a YouTuber. I do enjoy the people I have over there. I want to make that very, very clear because I don't want this getting misconstrued. It's one of the few places I can interact with people in that, you know, cyber social manner where we're going back and forth with comments, and it's usually 99.9% really good discourse and good people that I'm working with over there. But I've made it very clear before that I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook, so people are messaging me on Facebook. No, I pop in. I can actually post the podcast from the site Buzzsprout without ever visiting Facebook. So sometimes I think people see that I post a podcast and like, oh, Tom's on Facebook. No, I post it from the page of the website I'm using. I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook. And part of the reason is because, and I think a lot of people will get this, as much as there are fun things on it, there's also a lot of toxicity. There's a lot of stuff I don't need to see. I've mentioned before that one of the things that Facebook, I've noticed with Facebook, and one of the reasons I gravitated away from it, is because you can have these really nice conversations with people, but as soon as you look behind the curtain and see their Facebook page, you get to kind of see what kind of people they really are. And sometimes that can be difficult when you have a relationship with somebody and you think you're kind of, you know, online friends, and then you look at what they're posting and it's like, my God, I can't even be part of this. So I had a situation recently that I'm not going to name names. I'm not even going to use genders. I don't want to get into, because the individual involved, I don't think really wants to get this stuff out there, but it really kind of drove home how gross this can get. And I probably should preface this by the fact that the tarantula community, although it may seem like this big, wide, giant community with all the different, you know, Facebook groups and the forums and everything else, the different YouTubers, whatever, it's a very small group. It's everybody kind of knows everybody, especially if you spend any time in it. And if you spend any time on social media with it, you start to figure out who people are and who people are, you know, get along with. But we're all kind of tied together. And I think a lot of folks don't recognize how close and tight-knit a lot of people are. There are people that I don't necessarily talk about all the time on either my podcast or my videos, but that I'm friends with and talk to and communicate with and like. And I think sometimes people don't recognize that it's small enough that if you say something rotten about somebody, it's going to get back to them. And plus with social media, and again, I don't want this to turn into a big, we all know what social media is and how bad it can be. And it's got its good points, it's got its bad points, and trying to change people's behavior, it's never going to happen. But, you know, it's one of those dare to dream moments that if we could all just be civil to each other. But I think people need to understand that when you post something online about somebody, whether it be a vendor or an individual or a YouTuber or a podcaster, that is out there for everybody to see. And what you probably don't realize, you think you're having a back and forth with a buddy and, you know, nobody's, what harm is there going to be? We're having a little bathroom humor here talking about somebody. That gets out and people screenshot it. And next thing you know, people see it. So I don't want to get huge into the story, but there's a situation recently where somebody that I have a lot of respect for, that I consider a friend in the hobby, that I've interacted with quite a bit over the years, it has been very respectful to me. I was made privy to some information, some stuff online that was said about this individual that was absolutely vile. Like, we're talking, you know, and again, I played football, I played sports, I know the whole locker room humor thing. It's never been my thing, but I know there's a thing where, you know, people get by themselves and they talk like pigs or whatever. This was beyond that. This was just some really vile, nasty stuff. And unfortunately involved somebody else that I actually had dealings with before that I, you know, considered a hobby friend. And it was one of those things that you just look at and go, why? What is the point of this? And I think when you're a YouTuber, there's going to be people out there that like you. There's going to be people out there that don't like you. We can all talk about, I think just those of you that I've interacted with on, you know, through comments or on my videos and stuff, there's a couple people that we politely discuss that it kind of drives us nuts. They do the things they do, but we don't go behind the scenes saying horrifically sexual, nasty things to them. It's just not how it goes. You may go, yeah, I saw that video. It was really ridiculous and upsetting, but that's about it. And then we don't watch the channel anymore. But unfortunately, social media being social media, there's people that will see these personalities that they don't like. They'll see this YouTuber, we'll call it YouTuber X, and they decide, I don't like this individual. I don't like their delivery. I think they're phony. I think they don't know what they're talking about. I don't like the way they dress, whatever it may be. And then they go into one of these groups and they publicly destroy this person and say horrific things about them, misogynistic things about them, sexual things about them, whatever, just nasty stuff. And I just don't see the point of it. And the reason why I'm sharing this is because I have been approached over the years, and I'm just going to throw this out there because I honestly don't give a crap. I've been approached many times over the years from people who have wanted to do business with me because we get what happens. When you're a YouTuber and you've got an audience, a lot of people are going to approach you and be like, hey, I want to send you some free stuff because it's advertising. And it's always been the icky part of doing the whole YouTube thing that I don't like because I feel like they're buying you for a bit. They're paying you money and you don't know how this is going to turn out. I've done this in the past. I've just did a video on a spider that I received for free where the guy that I had an awesome experience with and I reviewed it. I took some free spiders. He sent some free spiders with some other stuff and I reviewed it, gave him a sparkling review and he ended up screwing a bunch of people over. I took that personally. I felt like I probably led some of those people to go buy from him. And that bothers me. So that's one of the things with YouTube is that people will approach you and be like, hey, you know what? I've got this product. I want you to test it out. I'd love to give you one. And they know what's going to happen. I'm going to open it up. I'm going to do a video of it and probably get them some notice, which sometimes I absolutely love. There are vendors I have worked with and promoted over the years that I am glad that I have sent them business. I feel good about it because they're people I use, still buy from. And I think that's why it's important to me nowadays when we talk about the fact that I don't like getting freebies, that it's important to me that I actually buy the stuff. So people realize I'm not just talking about something that somebody handed me for free. I've purchased this and will purchase it again. And I will make it clear. This isn't a one-off. This is something I will buy again. So I don't want people out there to have approached me. I'm doing a couple reviews coming up for people. I've got the frames that we just got for the ExoTerrors I'm going to be doing a review for. Those are things I thought were really cool and wanted to share the word because I like them. I think they're good products. And I think other people would be interested in them. However, there are cases where people will approach me, and this is the part I was leading up to, where they'll be like, hey, I want you to go, you know, I want to send you some stuff. I want to do some business with you. So, ostensibly, I'm promoting them. However, I've been privy to their YouTube postings. And again, I try to stay off this stuff, but sometimes you can't help it. And you've seen stuff, and you've seen that they are rotten human beings. Guess what? I'm not dealing with rotten human beings. I have a hard time with that. Like, I'm not going to promote somebody that is going to be all nice to my face and very professional and then turn around and say just horrific things about other people in the hobby or disparage certain groups. You know, you see the sexism, the racism, all that. I'm not into it. So I guess the reason I'm doing this is if you're somebody that approaches me and I kind of don't respond or I don't, you know, bother getting back to you or I just politely decline, recognize that A, you either don't have something I want, or B, you should probably be careful what you're posting online. And this goes for anybody that plans on anybody out there that's planning on selling tarantulas for a living or doing this, you need to be careful what you post online. I know you have every right, and I used to teach, you know, civics when I was in school, and we talked about freedom of speech and everything. You have every right to say what you want to say as long as it doesn't hurt somebody. But here's the deal. There are repercussions. There are consequences if you say it to the wrong people. So, for example, the individual that said there were two individuals involved that were saying these horrific things about somebody that I consider myself friendly with, and even if I wasn't friendly with them, I would have been absolutely disgusted by what was said. Now, guess what? You're not getting my business. So you just screwed yourself as far as a business person goes. I don't understand the theory, because I think there's this thought that, you know, we're, especially for folks, you know, in the United States, where we're like, yeah, we can say whatever we want. You sure can. You can also be held accountable for it later on. And I'm not talking before people jump on going, Tom's talking cancel culture. I'm not. I'm not blowing notice. I'm not using names here. I'm not trying to ruin anybody's business. I'm saying, me personally, I will not deal with people like that. So please keep that in mind, guys. This is a small hobby. It's a small world. Again, I feel like I'm teaching people how to hide the fact that you're a terrible human being, because I'm just saying, you know, keep all that crap inside you. Just don't post it online or post it in private messages. But there was just a situation, and I won't get into that one, with a group that I'm on where apparently some private messages that were really nasty were shared. And now the group went boom because, you share that in confidence with somebody. But guess what? It's always there. It's always, especially if you're using social media, if you're using text message, things that leave a receipt. I go through this with my students. I go through this with my own children. The fact that, you know, if you put this stuff online, it's there forever and can be held against you, whether you know it or not. So again, I don't want this. I feel like this is going to be one of these things I want to cut out later, but I think it needs to be said because I don't want to preach. I know nothing's going to change. The people out there that do this are going to continue to do this. The people that don't are going to continue to be, you know, appalled by that type of behavior. It's the nature, it's human nature. People will people. I get that. But this one hit close to home because I still feel gross. I still feel like somehow because I was involved with this individual and that's publicly known that this information, it reflects poorly on me. Like somehow I can condone that, and that makes me want to puke. Like never in a million years. So luckily the individual that was involved, I believe, got that and understood that I was upset by it. And I've contacted the one that was slighted. I've spoken to. It was a very uncomfortable conversation just by the nature of the, you know, stuff that was said. And I also contacted the person that said it to explain that I'm done. I'm not playing this game. That's not how I go. So guys, please, I hate to be corny because I hate this expression because I'm not really one of these, you know, hippy dippy peaceful type people, but be kind to each other, for crying out loud. Like, we're a small enough hobby. Everybody knows everybody. If you're starting a YouTube channel and you're talking like this, and I can tell you right now, I've had situations where people have asked me to do collaborations back in the day when I was doing more collaborations. And this is going to leave, I'm going to explain something in a moment too. Back in the day, I was doing more collaborations and somebody asked me to do a collaboration with him, seemed like a good person. I ended up joining, they became Facebook friends, and the stuff I saw posted, I was like, nope, never mind. Because again, when you're out there publicly, it's not just what you're putting forth about tarantulas. It's you as a person that's bared out there, that's on display. And I don't want to sit there and go, hey, go to this person here, because although he's got really good information about tarantulas, he's just a terrible human being, or she's just a terrible human being. So if you're planning on doing something public in this hobby, please, for the love of God, stay off. So if you're one of those people that can't help but post stuff up, or you think you're posting stuff up that's funny, or you're into locker room humor or whatever, get off social media, because it's not going to help your situation. It's enough that, believe me, even if you're not, your spot isn't getting blown publicly, people talk. I don't want to say they're blacklisted, because that's just silly. That's not how it goes. But you will basically eliminate possible avenues. You'll eliminate people that will purchase from you. You will eliminate people that will maybe work with you or promote you. You're doing nothing to help your own cause. So please keep that in mind. And keep in mind that if you're one of those people that, you know, is putting stuff up like this, and a lot of people go and add me, they friend me on my actual personal Facebook page, which I don't even know the last time I posted something on it that wasn't by accident. But I think a lot of people go online and they add me there. Keep in mind, now I can see everything you're posting, good or bad. And I guess in some instances, people aren't, like, don't have the wherewithal to recognize what they're posting is bad because that's their point of view. And I get that. Everybody's got their point of views. But when you're posting stuff that's abhorrent, that's nasty, that's just for no reason other than you don't like the person's YouTube channel, come on, man. There's enough negativity in the world. There's enough negativity in the hobby. If you don't like what they're doing, feel free to articulate, because obviously I've had people say stuff like, hey, you know what? I don't like this guy, but it's because of I've seen this and because he does this and I don't like the way he treats his animals or whatever. That's cool. That's respectful. That's stating facts. I don't like the person because of what they do, or I don't like the person's channel. But attacking the person, you know, in a personal manner and using stuff like, there's no place for that. So that's it. That's my tirade. I apologize. I was going to try to keep this under 5 minutes, but I feel like I needed to address it. So for folks that, you know, if you're somebody that likes to post stuff up like that, just go ahead and unfriend me. I'm totally okay with it. I don't even really check my Facebook page anyway, so I won't even notice. I'm not going to have hurt feelings. And if you're somebody that wants to be an important part of this hobby, please be a good person about it. Please support everybody. Please don't fall in these traps where you're with a bunch of your buddies and you're saying, you know, you're having a good time saying terribly sexual things about people or whatever. It does nobody any good. And all it's going to do is cripple you in this very small industry. All right. That's off my chest. I'm done. I'm not doing that anymore. But I feel like, and again, for the individual listening that was slighted, I do apologize. I'm not going to say who it is, but I feel terribly. I still feel terribly about the whole thing. Obviously, it's coming out in this podcast. So hopefully you won't have to deal with that kind of stuff anymore. All right. So moving on to the next part, we had sometimes just topics fall right into your lap. And I recently received an email from listener Amberly Hoffman that had some pretty good topics in it that I've actually had other people ask me about. And they come up. It's one of those ones that you've answered the question so many times individually that it's like, why don't I just like focus a little bit on it in a podcast or something where more people can benefit from my answer. So basically, there was a couple questions right off the bat. First one was about location. I'm new to the hobby with a few slings that are currently kept in my craft room because it's warmest in there and the cats don't have access. Good call there. Bummer is that I don't really go in there unless I'm working on tea stuff or crafting. So if I want to see my teas, I have to go in there and check on them. Would it be harmful to have them in a more central location? Does traffic upset them? Also, if I want to keep them in there overnight but move them to my desk during the day, is that okay? Does the movement of the enclosure stress them? I admit sometimes I pick up the deli cups to look at them. Is this unhealthy? And I think we have all been there where, you know, you've got these tiny little slings in these containers, and every time you pick them up, it's like somebody picking up your house and shaking it. At least that's the way we think of it. Now, Amberly, I can tell you that when we originally had our tarantulas in the other house, they were in a very high traffic. I did have a tarantula room, but it was a relatively high traffic area because the reason why this room couldn't be used as a bedroom is it led out to our laundry room and then out to the garage. So essentially, if you wanted to go out the back door, you had to go through my tarantula room first. So there was a lot of traffic. So to answer your first question, when possible, it's nice sometimes to put them in a quiet location, but I found that it doesn't really matter if you have a high traffic area, they tend to do quite well. Now, the things you want to worry about if they're in an area, now, one of the things you mentioned in your description is the fact they're in a warm room. That's awesome. And I think a lot of us, I've encouraged people before that if you want your tarantulas to grow a little faster, if you're worried about the temperatures dropping someplace, you know, dropping to a point where you're afraid it's going to be unhealthy for them, that a good trick is to find a room that's warmer. And sometimes that room isn't the ideal room. Sometimes that room isn't where you'd want them. Right now, I have my own tarantula room above a garage it did take some getting used to because I was so used to, again, my old tarantula room, a lot of traffic. I was in there all the time going back and forth to the garage. It was very easy to get to. Now I'm kind of removed from the rest of the house. So I totally get the idea that now you have to actively go look at your tarantulas as opposed to before where you were naturally walking through that area all the time. I totally get that. If it's not drafty, I would say definitely move them into the other room if you'd like. That's one thing you always want to be careful of is sometimes the rooms that you have that, you know, the bigger rooms, there's a lot of drafts. If it's a high traffic area, you have cold air coming in during the, you know, winter months, you want to be careful of that because although little fluctuations in temperature obviously isn't going to do too much for them, you don't want them in a situation where they're getting hit with cool drafts or cold drafts all the time. That's something to be careful of. However, basic traffic, one thing I do want to make very clear is the cat situation. Cats are not friends with our tarantulas. Cats, I've heard more horror stories over the years with cats batting around tarantulas, opening tarantula cages, knocking down tarantulas, killing tarantulas, one case getting bit by a tarantula. They will, unlike dogs, and I have four dogs, my dogs can walk in my tarantula room, they don't even seem to know there's anybody in there. There could be a tarantula right in front of them moving around. They don't even seem to recognize there's an animal in there. They have no interest in it whatsoever. That's been the six or seven I've kept around tarantulas. No problem. Cats, on the other hand, they're more attuned to their hunting instincts. They don't lose that. And if they notice something's in there, they're going to try to get it. So one thing I would caution, Amberly, is that if you do move them out of that room, be sure that you secure them and have them in a place that the cats can't get to it. Because I will tell you, I've had situations and some of the horror stories I've heard is like, hey, I had them in there for a year. The cats never bothered them. Came on the other day and they had knocked them all down. I just had a situation, actually it was probably about a month and a half, 2 months ago, where somebody emailed me because they had a shelf of them that the cats never bothered. They came home and the cats had knocked a bunch of them down. Two of them died. One of them escaped and one of them was okay. it's something you want to make sure that if you do move them into that room, I wouldn't so much be worried about the temperature or the noise. I'd be worried about the cats. Now, as far as the noise, I think it's been well documented. Anybody that watches my videos knows that there is usually music playing in my house when I'm working on tarantulas. Right now in my tarantula room, I have an Amazon Echo up here that I use, and I'm constantly blasting music when I'm doing feeding. Back in the other house, when we take them out in the dining room, I'd sometimes have the speaker, you know, right near the table. They don't seem to get bothered by that. Worst case scenario, the bass part of it, the bass in your music is going to, or the bass in your TV, if you have them in a room where you have your entertainment system, that can kind of, obviously it's going to shake, they might respond, and what you're going to get is they're going to go and hide in their burrows, but it doesn't seem to stress them out to a point where I'd worry about it very much. And I can say that from experience that, again, with our high traffic area, with the fact that I would play music in there, the fact that the wall behind many of the tarantulas where I had them, I had this huge wall with shelving right on the wall, the TV and speakers were right behind that with the subwoofer, sometimes it would bounce and bang, and I'd see my tarantulas sitting right out in the open, not paying it any notice whatsoever. It didn't seem to bother them. So things to think about if you're putting them in a high traffic room, make sure that pets aren't going to be able to get to them. Number one, that would be my first priority. Number two, make sure they're not going to be in a place where they're going to find themselves, I don't know, baking in direct sunlight. That's something to think about as well. I know with my new tarantula room up here, originally I had two skylights and a window on the side that I've had to cover because the light would come in at certain times of the day and hit some of the cages, and it could be dangerous. It could heat them up. So you want to think about heat as well. Make sure it's not going to be a situation where you put them on a shelf in your living room. They look great. Like, look at, they're all there. I can see them all the time. You go to work, and then the day, the morning, the sun comes up, hits that, and kind of bakes them like a magnifying glass in an anthill. You want to be very careful of that as well. So make sure the temperatures are regulated. They're safe from pets. They're, you know, safe from kids as well. Make sure, just to give you a heads up, when you have company over, people that are arachnophobic generally figure out you have spiders in there, can make things uncomfortable, and we can all do that. Well, it's my house. If you don't like it, go. But there's been, I've had situations where I felt badly because the people are very arachnophobic. We're not trying to freak them out. So just keep that in mind. But as far as being in a central location, no, I don't think it's a problem. As long as you cover that criteria, the traffic isn't going to be a problem. Playing your music isn't going to be a problem. Playing your TV isn't going to be a problem. Just watch those things we mentioned. Now, for the second part of your question, it's about lighting. Since they are in the craft room, basement without much light, I turn on a light for them during the day and turn it off at night. Sometimes, though, I want to go in and check on them at night, but worry that flipping the lights on would perturb them. So I just use my phone flashlight, not ideal. I'm sure you've seen the LED light systems that some hobbyists have, the Tarantula Collective, for example. Is this constant light okay for them? Answer is, yes, it is. I've heard for years, and I've talked to people that have told me, listen, I'm keeping them in a closet because there's too much light in my house during the day. That is not a problem. You don't, as we've already mentioned, you don't want a situation where you're getting sunlight coming in and baking them. That's a no-no. That's something you got to be careful with. But as far as having lighting systems, I've always given mine a day-night cycle since I've had them. I've always had, and sometimes during the summer, I have longer daylight cycles because I'm off during the summer and I'm awake, and naturally in their natural habitat, they would likely have longer light cycles. So that's no problem at all. The ones that don't like the light on them, I mean, I wouldn't put lights directly on them, but let me make that very clear. I see sometimes these enclosures where people have lights like right on top of the tank. I try to avoid that. But having some LED lights along the top, I did that before. I had them, and I have red. I had ones I could change the colors so I could make them red at night, which was nice because they supposedly don't recognize the red spectrum of light, so they will still come out and be active in that situation. So lighting, not an issue. I have lighting on right now. I'm sitting in my tarantula room. I usually flick the lights on when I wake up in the morning, and I flip the lights off when I go to bed. Not a problem at all. And I've told many people this, don't worry about keeping them in the dark all the time. You can do it. I guess there's, you know, it's not going to hurt them, but I don't think it's necessary to keep tarantulas in the dark. A lot of us give them a natural daylight cycle. Now, as far as flicking the lights on and off, not a big deal. It happens. I've done it. I've gone down and turned the lights off for the night, decided I want to go back up and do some more feeding or check on something. I turn them back off. Worst case scenario, what you're going to end up with is some of your shy ones that come out at night will be out and about, and you'll catch them out. You'll catch a little glimpse of them before they, you know, disappear. But worst case scenario, they're just going to run back in their burrow. Once the lights go back out again, they will venture out again. So that's not a problem at all. I totally get that, though, because I know when I first started setting up with them and having my, when we created the tarantula room, which at the time was not the tarantula room because I only had a handful of them, but we, I was worried about keeping the lights on. I used to turn the lights off a lot. I would make sure, you know, I only gave him a few hours of daylight. And then it got to be the point where, like, after I turned the lights off, I'd get upset. Not upset, but when people would go into that room and flick the light on, it's like, my God, just turn the lights off. The tarantulas are all, I don't know, sleeping, whatever. It was just ridiculous. We found after a while it wasn't a problem. You could turn the lights on, you can turn the lights off. Just make sure, I would not leave them on 24/7. Let me make that very clear. You know, you want to give them that night cycle where they can go out and relax. Some of them will come out and they'll drink from their water dishes. They'll drink off the sides of the enclosures if you missed them at night. If you drop prey items in that they didn't pick up before, they'll come out and hunt. So you want to make sure you give them the day-night cycle. But as far as lighting, I haven't seen any problems with it. The ones that don't like light will run away from it. The ones that don't mind light will sit right out in the open. And right now I'm looking at a very well-lit room, and I have a bunch of Pecancerides, a bunch of Formicutes species behind me. They're sitting right out in the open with no problem. So not an issue. Do know, however, something I should mention, that if you have tarantulas that are used to being in the darkness, and I've heard people experience this issue before, say you've kept them in a situation where they're mostly dark, or they're in cages that allow them, they're more opaque and they don't get as much light in them, and you change the position so now they're in a room where there's much more light, or in an enclosure where it's much more well lit, you may see the tarantulas become more skittish because they're not used to that. They're feeling exposed. So they're used to being much more dark and secure. Suddenly you've got them on a new shelf where they're getting much more light. You could see a tarantula that looks like it's stressed out. That's something to keep an eye on. Usually if you give it the proper hide or a place to burrow, the tarantulas will eventually, when the light goes on, they'll eventually, or at night, they'll creep down into that burrow, make that their home base, and then when the lights come on, they'll just retreat to that. But that's something to keep in mind too, because I've had people that go, you know what, I was keeping them in this nice dark shoebox, and then I just put them on a new shelf where it gets a lot of light from the room, and they're all scrunched up in the stress pose in a corner. That's because they're not used to that type of stimuli. So just something to keep in mind. So Amberly, I hope that answered your questions. Thanks for emailing. Again, when you put something out there and say this could make a good podcast, I'm going to jump all over that. And as luck would have it, I was supposed to do an interview with somebody else today, which will be pushed off to probably next week or the week after. It's trying to coordinate schedules with people is tough, and it's mostly my fault because I'm doing a lot during the weekends. But that one got pushed off, so this was a perfect thing to talk about for today. So thanks so much, Amberly. Hopefully you answered your questions there. And finally, I've been asked twice in just 1 week this question, so I figured it would be a good time to cover it. And I've been asked it before, and I'm starting to change my thinking on it to a point. So let me just come out there and give what the question is. I've had two people ask whether or not it's okay to reuse substrate, or whether or not I will reuse substrate. Now, the first several, you know, for years until just recently, I would never, ever, ever reuse substrate. And part of the issue is if it's a fossorial species, you're pouring water into it. There's, as much as you try to pull out boluses and all the, you know, organic material from prey items or whatnot, my belief is that that stuff starts to build up. And what you'll have is you'll have stuff building up, you'll have bacteria in there. And I've never wanted to bring the bacteria over into another enclosure. The other thing is with New World species is, even though they may look like they're not kicking hairs, they often kick hairs and lay hairs down around their webbing. You'll get hairs around, you know, anybody that's ever reached into a New World specimen's container without gloves on to do cleanings and stuff knows that sometimes you walk away and your hands are all itchy is because there's hairs in there. And I always wondered if having those hairs in there would be a problem to another species or another specimen. So I've never wanted to take that chance. So any, basically, whether it was dry, whether it was wet, whatever it was, and sometimes this really stunk because back in the day, I was like spending a lot of money on substrate. You'd fill up this huge bin and then something would mature out male and be like, okay, and that's the end of that. And the male would either get sent off or the male would pass away. And then you just dump this whole box of dirt that you just bought, and it was ridiculous. So I've spoken before about the fact we have this huge pile in our old house, a huge pile of dirt and old substrate next to my garage that is just, it's enormous because I've dumped so much stuff there over the years. Well, recently, I won't say I'm reusing much substrate, but I have found myself in situations where I think it's safe to reuse it. And in most of them, it's in instances where I put something into an adult enclosure, a specimen into an adult enclosure, only to have it, again, molt out male. So now we have this beautiful enclosure. In a couple of cases, it's been I won't say bioactive, but it's been an enclosure with the fixins, with the plants, you know, with the, it just a nice setup. And in those instances, I haven't wanted to waste the setups or to waste the plant. You know, I suppose I could pull the plant out, wash it all off, replant it somewhere else. So what I've done is once the males have either been sent on or passed away, what I will do is I will go in with some hot water. I will clean the whole container out, clean the, you know, the surface out, any poo on the glass, I'll clean that out, get rid of it. Then I will go in and scoop out the top layer of substrate. So all the stuff that was on the top, I take that out and put a new fresh coat of substrate over top of it, put some new leaf litter, some moss, whatever I want, and then use the existing old stuff. I'll keep that on the bottom. So they have new stuff on the top, old stuff on the bottom, which if it's only been in there for a few months, really hasn't been touched. And I've had a couple instances, one with a Coelobrachia species electric blue, set it up in a glass. I thought it was a female. I was hoping it was a female. It seemed to be good size. So the blue molted out mature male, but I had set it up in a tank with a glass tank with the pothos. It had a pothos in it. It had, you know, the whole nine yard. It was kind of a little mini, I hate to use bioactive because it's not a true bioactive. It just had a plant in it. And then it basically, I put it in the new enclosure. It burrowed. It came out. It was a male. So unfortunately, that one, I did not get it out to breed and it ended up passing on, but I was able to clean out the enclosure and now I have another. He'd done barely any burrowing, so I took off the top inch and a half or so, replaced it with fresh substrate, reset up, did a new, you know, piece of cork bark hide, water dish, everything, all the fixins, and now it's sitting there waiting for occupancy. So I would say in some in instances where the soil hasn't been in there forever or when it hasn't been contaminated that much, then I think there are ways to reuse some of it. Would I just take all substrate and reuse it? No. And I've spoken to people that have done it, and whatever works for you, that's fine. I just find something, I just don't want to have a situation where I'm taking something out of its enclosure and just dumping another spider in. I think the spider deserves them. They do have pheromones, if I'm not mistaken. I would wonder what having pheromones of another spider might, if it might aggravate another spider, if they might, I don't even know if they notice it, but it's always in the back of my mind. Like, I don't want to give it a situation where I drop it in a new enclosure and it recognizes or feels like it's some other spider's home or causes stress. So more often than not, if it's, you know, juveniles or slings, I dump it. If it's a big adult enclosure that I've set up and spent, you know, put 7 inches, 6-7 inches of substrate in, and I end up moving something, or, you know, a male dies, or I sell a male off to breed, whatever, then I may clean it up and reuse it. So that's the short answer of that. Feel free to chime in for people, you know, that have reused before. What do you do with it? Again, I haven't done it until recently, so I don't have a lot of experience with it, but that's what I've been doing with the ones I have saved. And a lot of those, again, it's around the having the plant in there. I don't want to do something that's going to completely destroy the plant. And it seems like you can clean them up quite well without having to redo the whole enclosure and throw everything out. Plus, when you start buying some of the more expensive BioDude substrate, when you fill, you know, use 2 bags of that to fill up a container and then it molts out male in a month and 2 months it's off or dead or you sent it off. That's kind of a waste of substrate. Like, it's really, it's clean, it's usable, so let's use it. So that would be my take on that, but please feel free to chime in if you're somebody to reuse it. I know I've spoken to other people that will take it and put it someplace and kind of compost it and then reuse it after it kind of rots and, you know, breaks down a bit. Let me know what you do. I'd love to hear it. So that should about do it for this one. Before we go, though, I want to mention, I know I've been saying this for months, but I started really in earnest trying to put together my video about water dishes. I've batted back and forth how I wanted to do it. I finally got my script done out, and I had actually put together kind of a montage with some of the images people had given me before, but unfortunately, one of my hard drives pooped out the other day, and I believe all of the pictures were on that. Now, I was able to go through my email, and this has been kind of monotonous because I had these things. Basically, if somebody sent me something, I would save the picture with their name on it so I knew what to put in the video. I lost a lot of those, and I've gone back through and gone through my emails. I found at least 20 emails from people with pictures and videos of the tarantulas drinking. However, if you want to double check and send something my way, I've just received a bunch from some people. Know that I've got them. I'm going to be using them. So I'm hopefully we'll start putting that together. I have April break coming up. It's going to be a long one because of what I want to do with it, but I want to make sure I do it right, and I don't want it to be the type of video that I put out and go, man, I should have spent more time on this. So if you sent me ones already and want to double check, I can let you know if I have them, because again, I was able to find a lot of the original emails. I just wasn't able to find that folder that I downloaded them all into. And if you're somebody out there that hasn't sent in any yet, now's your time, because I am going to start reassembling this very soon. So if you want to get those pictures to me, feel free, we'll put you in there. I'll probably have something on the end where I thank people. I'm Also looking at having the pictures as they're on the screen, labeling who they're from. It's just the problem is some of them, it's a lot. It's going to be a lot of names, and I do a lot of text on my videos. So trying to figure out how to make that work so that everybody gets credit for what they put out there. Because I couldn't do this video without you. I do have pictures of mine drinking, but we've got so many pictures of so many different species, including arboreals and fossorials drinking, that I want to make sure I can show off the full gamut. So when somebody says, oh, they won't use water dishes, we can really put that one to rest. So feel free to chip in with more of them. I have a hard time pulling them off Facebook. They don't come out. I'd rather have you email them to me, or if you have them uploaded, send me a link to the upload so I can get some good quality ones. That would be great. So that will do it for this one. As always, you can find me on tomsbigspiders.com. You can find me on Tom's Big Spiders on YouTube. Just posted up another rehousing video featuring Omothamus shiodate, I believe. Feel free to check that one out if you want. The beautiful species, unfortunately, mine appears to be male, which I was hoping was going to be a female, but it was already showing some green, and I believe it just molted. And it hasn't come out yet, but we're looking down the hole. It looks like a big gangly green mature male. So anyway, might be an interesting video to check out. And, you know, website, YouTube, we covered all that. I'm done. My voice is killing me. Y'all have a great one. Stay safe, and we'll catch you all next time.